we strongly advise our players safe to get the flu shot. You know, they don't have to, but 99% of them do because we say it's a good idea and get it done. So on the same basis, if you're in a hub, you'd certainly be downloading the app.
Greg Swan, CEO of the Brisbane Lions, talking about strongly advising players to get flu shots. That was a week ago when we were talking about this story that was bubbling in the NRL world about players, whether they are going to be asked to or be made to compulsorily get a flu shot or not. Here's David Swallow, captain of the Gold Coast Suns, speaking this morning about whether it should be mandatory for AFL players to have a flu shot before they're allowed to play.
Look, to be honest, I'm not too sure it should be mandatory, but you know, everyone's going to have their different beliefs and opinions on this matter, and I don't know if we should be forcing anyone to do anything that they wouldn't be comfortable doing. I know others would have a different opinion on that, but I guess that's my opinion.
David Swallow, Scott Sattler is from NRL Nation and Sports Day Central for Illusion Gas Log Fires, clearing all current stock right now, illusionfires.com. It might be compulsory for NRL players to get a flu shot if they want to play games in Queensland. Scott joins me. Welcome to you, Scott. Great to have you on.
Thanks, Dwayne. Yeah, it's a reshaping landscape of professional sport at the moment, isn't it? And decisions being made, I think... in normal circumstances, you wouldn't force anyone to put something into their body they may not usually do. But we know we're not living in normal circumstances, are we?
No, we're not. So do you think what the resolution will be is, if you don't want to get a flu shot, then you don't play, and that's fine. We accept that. That's your personal life choice. But if you do want to play, especially in Queensland, you're going to have to get one. Otherwise, you don't play.
Yeah, I think it might sound a little bit... it might be a little bit prejudicial, but I think it'd be case by case, Dwayne, to be quite honest. I think those that have a medical reason that they can't have the flu back for whatever reason, I think that needs to be taken into account. If it's a conscientious decision that you just don't want to have it for whatever reason, I think that won't fly under what the federal and state governments are saying and the health organisation. They're saying that we are living in unusual circumstances. We know that the flu vac doesn't make you immune from the COVID. But what we do know is that if you do get the flu and you do get COVID-19, well, the results could be catastrophic. So that's what they're trying to do, protect the actual individual as well. So I do support the stance that if it is a decision of yours that you don't want to get the flu vac and unfortunately you can't play, I tend to believe that the NRL and the federal government and the state governments have worked really, really well together to get to the point we are at the moment. And this seems to be we're taking two steps forward and one step back.
So if it's the law to play NRL in Queensland that you're going to have it, then it's got to be pretty much the same for the Brisbane Lions and the Gold Coast Suns to get it, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Anastasia Palaszczuk She's been very robust in her responses over recent weeks in relation to the essential items, whether AFL and rugby league is classed as essential. We know that rugby league has been classed and been given exemptions around those travel restrictions. So it'd be no different to the Lions. But I feel as though the government, Dwayne, have said to themselves, hang on, we've bent over backwards for the game and the games to go ahead in some way, shape or form. And now the players want to try and take the control back into their hands. We're doing everything we can to help them. Let them help us as well. So, it's sort of like a couple of gunslingers standing at 10 paces, seeing who's going to blink first.
Because, let's face it, to get professional contact sport back, there has to be an exemption from social distancing, which we expect, and we have expected, and the government has told us that they will give, by the sounds of things. We're presuming that that's all going to be okay. So... if you're a professional sports person, then in your job, you can tackle other people. But part of the parameters of being able to not have the social distancing expectation placed on you is that you're going to have to get this thing. It might be two gunslingers looking at each other, staring each other down, Scott, but I tend to back the government normally.
I tend to agree with you also. The federal and state governments are now saying that the revised waiver that the players were presented with as of yesterday, they're just not good enough. and they took out a couple of lines. The Players Association liked a little bit of wording in the waiver where it said, we agree and acknowledge that we have been, we've been told the risks that are at stake here. They wanted the agree and taken out of, so it just says we acknowledge. So you've told us, we don't have to agree with you, but we acknowledge that you've told us and we're aware of the risks. Now, federal and state government saying, no, that's just not on. We're not going to accept that. And I feel as though the government, the NRL, will be willing to fight it legally if need be. Knowing the way that I do with Peter Volandis, he'll stand firm on this because he knows that he's worked really hard to try and talk to as many stakeholders as possible to try and get this up and running. So I think there's going to be some far more serious discussions over the next 3 to 4 days amongst the Players Association, the NRL.
Yeah, because in a perfect world, if we can, hypothesise as to what might happen in 2021, in a perfect world, we might get to March 2021 with a season about to start where you might have to have a coronavirus vaccine injection before you play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we know that we're, again, in unique times. So, when I played, Dwayne, I never got the flu back each year, but I think I just did it out of laziness. I didn't do it for any reason. But if I was told that I had to get it done because it's my primary place of employment and it's what really pays my mortgage and is able to feed my family, well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do it for the good of the game. Now, I know there are other people out there that have got beliefs, whether it's religious. Like I said, medical, I think, is probably something that needs to be handled with a lot more delicately along with religious beliefs as well. But I think what it really needs is it really needs some really smart people to just sit down face to face with these players and talk to them about the importance of getting this game up and running and the importance of it, what it is to the players themselves if they're not allowed to play, what that may look like, how that may map out for them, because I don't think they're going to like the outcome of the player.
No, and if they bring in a lawyer and say, well, hang on, this wasn't part of the contract that I signed to play in 2020 it wasn't compulsory to get a flu vaccine, so yeah. My lawyer says right now, you can't stop me from going about my business as a strain of trade, that will be an interesting one. Do you think that any of the players would get a lawyer to try and fight on their behalf to get through this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think through the Rugby League Players Association, that's what the Players Association is there for, to support the players' beliefs. And the Rugby League Players Association and the NRL haven't had a really good relationship for a lot of years. We've been very envious of the AFL Players Association and the relationship they've had with head office for a lot of years. And now we've started to make some headway. Clint Newton, the new CEO, he's got a seat at the table, really good relationship with Volandis and new CEO, Andrew Abdo. When push comes to shove, if a player's rights feel as though, well, they feel as though they're being discriminated, well, absolutely, I think they will engage lawyers. And like I said, I feel as though the NRL and the government would be willing to go toe-to-toe if that's the case, because again, we're living in unique times and we need to make unique decisions, unfortunately.
Yep, it is bizarre, but these are the hurdles. There's been so many hurdles to overcome, and the NRL and the AFL has tried so hard to have a look at what the hurdles might be and prepare for them, but this is yet another one, and hopefully this gets played out in a hurry and we can get a resolution, Scott. Really appreciate you explaining it to me and my listeners. Thanks for your time.
Anytime, Dwayne.
Scott Sattler from NRL Nation and Sports Day Central. So they're not going to be made to get a flu shot. The way it stands right now, they'll have a choice. You don't have to have the flu shot, but then you won't be able to play in Queensland. And maybe even the federal government will have made that a proviso, that if you want to play a professional contact sport, then you have to have a flu shot. But there's a bit to play out in that as well. Take your calls very shortly. 1-300-736-736. Dave in Richmond. Welcome to you, Dave.
My flu vaccine, I don't really like getting it. And I spoke to them, do I have to have it at work? Because I work in the health, as you know. And they said, you don't have to have it, but it's not really about you. It's about protecting everyone else. And I felt a bit groggy for a day, but it's fine now.
I don't like having it either, Dave. And that's the thing that you kind of think, well, okay, well, I'm in a workplace with other people. And, you in some ways want to do the right thing. But I'm not religious to that point that, I'm trying to do the right thing by the rules of my religion. So that's the hard part here, because we have to respect the religion and respect the wishes, but we also have to respect what the government's saying. So it's a bit to play out. So you get it every year, Dave?
I do, yeah. The other thing, Dwayne, is I've got a VRC membership and an AFL membership, and I've paid a grand up front, and I'm like, well, I kind of feel like if I'm not going to be able to use these things, what should be the outcome? Like, my AFL membership pays about 40% of that, of the 500, to Richmond. But the rest of it, the AFL keeps. But if they're going to have 30,000 people asking the same question, should I get something back or should it be rolled over the next year? It sort of just compiles the problem for the AFL, but also, what am I getting for my money? I can't use something that I've paid for. So where is that nice balance?
They're waiting. They're waiting to see what is going to happen at the end of this year and whether some crowds can come back and whether memberships, if you've got a circumstance where you desperately need your money back, I think they will accommodate that. But Dave, what if they roll it into 2021? What if you got 2021 for your 2020 membership? Would you accept that?
Yeah, I suppose so. I'd love to see them get rid of these ridiculous Ticketek upgrading seat prices. I feel that's one of the biggest burdens on the average fan, actually. It's not so much the membership, it's the actual upgrading to a seat because of the arrangement that the AFL signed with Ticketek and Ticketmaster. But I'd love to see it rolled over. I'd love to see more fans not be excluded from the big games like the grand final and the preliminary final, because they really are massive corporate money-grabbing games. And I just feel like it might be time in this circumstance to actually hand that back to the fans, where there is 45,000 each one day again of each of the two playing teams.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dave. There's a lot of our listeners that are with you trying to work out what it's going to look like down the track. But at the moment, everyone's just on hold, and memberships right now are in that situation. If you paid your money, we're kind of on hold to try and work out what the best result's going to be in a month or two's time. Harry and Clayton, before we take a break and hopefully hear from the Premier of Victoria, Daniel Andrews, as to what the Victorian government will decide to implement out of the federal government's three-step plan that they unveiled today that didn't have a date to it as to when it all gets implemented step by step, but every state can decide how and when. So hopefully Daniel Andrews shortly. But Harry and Clayton, welcome to you, Harry.
Dwayne, thanks again for having me on the show, mate. I'm enjoying it as usual.
Thank you.
Now, mate, the question I've got for you, Dwayne, is in a court of law, isn't it a decision what is deemed to be what is based on reasonable doubt? Now, a lot of people, I'm not sure if you want to use the word spruiking, but in regards to vaccinations, right, there is a lot of people out there who have done no research and yet seem to have an opinion on vaccinations. I'm not an anti-vax. I know that they have their role and their place in our society and in the medical world. But there is absolutely lots of reasonable doubt in regards to vaccinations, their history, their agenda, and a lot of other issues. There's heaps of issues. I would have thought it's absolutely reasonable for any reason, for a person to have a reasonable doubt on the vaccination, on its agenda, on the medical people who are spruiking it. And to force people to have something that they don't even know what's actually even going into their body.
They're not being forced to have it. They're being given the choice. If you want to play, you might have to have it. That's the choice. They're not being forced to have it. They're not being held down. It's going to be their choice.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily right, Dwayne, because then my ability, for an example, to be able to work in my chosen profession, yeah, where I'm being forced to have something where most people who have an opinion on aren't even aware of what's actually going into your body. I've done a little bit of research, and I'm not a smart, learned man, but I have an understanding of some of the stuff that goes into the vaccination.
Yep.
The chemicals that are going, they're dangerous chemicals, and there's
just on that note, it's not my area of expertise. I'm not about to stand here and on this radio station tell people that they should or shouldn't get a vaccine. That's not my station. That's well above my pay grade. And at the same time, I don't think we should be getting people to come on and spruik this or that when it comes to vaccines. It's personal choice, but some workplaces are now going to make that personal choice a pretty big issue. And the NRL has made that personal choice a massive issue now, because it looks like you won't be able to play unless you get it. But they're trying to work their way through that. Here's the Premier of Victoria, Daniel Andrews.
That so many Victorians have come forward to get tested, queuing often for quite lengthy periods. It's an amazing thing, and I'm very, very proud that people have come forward in that way. Now, there's more testing going on today, and from a ring around of test sites this morning, we won't have final numbers until the early part of the evening tonight, but Those sites are all busy, and we will continue to see more and more people tested. It may be that we finish up with another number that's around that 20,000 mark from today's testing activity. So we have well and truly smashed through the 100,000 target. And again, the more data we have, the more options we have. Now, there is one challenge with so many tests. Taking the tests is one part of it. Having them go through the laboratory process, having them actually processed, is a slightly different challenge. We don't have all the results of every test that's been taken. That's going to take a few days, and it'll be right throughout the weekend before we get all the results, certainly for the 100, 105,000 that have already been taken. But this is a mighty effort, and I'm very, very proud. It was always a target. We weren't 100% certain that we would get 100,000 people, but the response of the Victorian community has been just overwhelming, and I'm so grateful to everybody who has presented for a test. Also, can I just give a shout-out to those who are running those tests. They're doing work round the clock. It's challenging work, and we're all very grateful to them. Now, this morning we had a very good National Cabinet meeting, as we've had all the way through this pandemic, and Australia's response to it, I think, has been much better because we've had a unified National Cabinet, a unique forum, where under the Prime Minister's leadership we've been able to make decisions that really have got us into this these numbers and got us into the position. This is a position that so many other countries simply aren't in, and they would love to swap their place with us. Now, whilst I welcome the overall pathway, I also welcome the commentary from the Prime Minister and the decision of National Cabinet that what is done and when, that is the timeline, the staggered nature of easing off the rules we've put in place, is fundamentally a matter for individual states and territories. Now, I know that you are going to ask me in a moment if lots of questions about what's going to change. Nothing changes today, nothing changes tomorrow, nothing changes Sunday. The rules remain in place. And I just reiterate, these are the rules, and the strong compliance we've seen from Victorians, for which I'm very grateful, that's what's delivered these numbers. Let's not give everything back. Let's not throw away all the progress we've made by letting our frustration get the better of us. On Monday, and indeed throughout next week, I will have a series of announcements to make about changes to the rules. Those rules, that will not be all the rules going, and it won't necessarily be that the moment I announce something, a change happens right then. There may be time required to move from announcing a change to the effect of that. The key point here is that even at the end of next week, even at the end of May, there will still be rules in place, and they're there for a good reason. They're not there for me. They're there for your safety and the safety of your family and every Victorian family. So I just urge Victorians, I know it's frustrating. I know we're getting very close to making an important step to potentially, well, in fact, to ease a range of these rules. But now is not the time to become so impatient and so frustrated that we start doing the wrong thing and jeopardising the progress we've all made together. Thank you for being tested. It's so impressive to think We may get to the point where we have 150,000 or more people in a little over 10 days that will have presented to get tested. That is a mighty effort. And the more tests you have, the more options you have. And that's why next week I think we'll be filled with lots of different announcements that are all cautious and careful, but will, I think, be welcomed by Victorians because they're based in science. They are based in the biggest testing protocol that our country has seen right throughout this global pandemic. And again, thanks to everybody for getting tested, and thanks for those who are processing those tests. I'm happy to take any questions you've got.
Premier, how do you convince people now,
Victorians, the United States, well, because every other state is different. No state is, no two states are in exactly the same spot. No two states have had this disease unfold the way everybody is in a unique set of circumstances, and trying to pretend that there's some national lowest common denominator or national average, that would be silly. And that's why the Prime Minister and National Cabinet have agreed that whilst this is a framework, a three-stage framework, it will be applied, it will be realised in different ways in different states. And that's the way that it should be. So I know it's frustrating. No one for a moment has ever suggested, least of all me, that Victorians are enjoying these rules. They're there for a reason, though. The strategy's working. Let's not undermine that strategy and our solid performance. In fact, our spectacular performance when you compare us to so many other parts of the world. Let's just stay the course. And then next week, we'll be able to outline what the rules are going to look like for the rest of May. And then we'll be making further announcements throughout May about June and so on and so forth. We'll keep those announcements to a minimum, though. We don't want to be confusing people. And there's nothing confusing about this. Do the right thing for your family. Do the right thing for every Victorian family. That's what I'm asking you to do. And anyone who thinks that this is over and that they can just do as they please and flagrantly and just flout the rules, then Victoria Police are out there and they will find people. But I hope they don't have to do that. I hope people realise we're so close to being able to move to a new set of rules. Let's just stay the course on this. And then next week can be about a new set of rules, at least for the rest of May. Sorry? There will be changes announced Monday, but again, I just want to... Oh, I think you'll find that most of the changes that we will announce, and two points to make. One, we don't have all the results. We have to wait and see what those results show. You don't do the testing and then fundamentally ignore the outcomes of that testing, and I can't predict what those results will be. The second point I'd make is that some things, quite logically, if you make an announcement on Monday, it'll take some time for different sectors, for different parts of the Victorian economy and Victorian community to be able to be ready for that change. If you think about the top line in that framework document that the Prime Minister has put out today and that National Cabinet agreed to, that's a kind of menu, if you like, and we will choose the elements of that and the respective timing for the rollout of each of those elements that best suit Victoria, that best suit the unique circumstances that we face. Now, I just want to make the point about community transmission. We have above 10% of our cases. That means we're not like other states that have literally no community transmission or such a small number, 2 or 3%. We have many more community transmissions, and that's been a feature of the disease as it's presented in Victoria over these last 8, 10, 12 weeks.
Stay with this.
Well, we'll have more to say about all of the... very clever, I like that. It's very good. It's Friday. And look, I know that everyone would love to be back at the pub or at a cafe or at a restaurant. Lots of different things people would love to be doing. I get it, I understand it. But we've got to do it in a methodical, careful way. We've come too far to give everything back because we let our frustration get the better of us. That's not going to happen in Victoria. Because I'm really confident that just as more than an MCG's worth of Victorians have come forward to get tested, I think Victorians will stick with these rules, as challenging as they are, as frustrating as they can be, because they know they're working. When I have more to say about cafes and restaurants, when I have more to say about gatherings inside and outside, when I have more to say about all the elements of that top line in that three-stage framework, I will do that, and that process will begin on Monday.
So there it is. Daniel Ander is the Premier of Victoria. Monday, the announcements will be made on the timeline of any changes. So nothing in Victoria changes right now as far as the coronavirus lockdown rules are concerned. No changes right now, no changes today, no changes for the weekend. See you Monday when the results of some recent testing is known. Back to your calls very shortly. Don't the golf clubs dusted off or the fishing rod dusted off just yet. Take a break.